This weekend starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
The search for students. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
As our kids return to classrooms, teachers and other education leaders are looking for thousands of missing students.
Have you embarked on a home renovation project during the pandemic? Hear why it's so complicated to choose white paint.
On the travel front, how a woman on a weekend trip to Tonga is still there 18 months later.
And why you can't ignore data breaches like the one at T-Mobile that impacted tens of millions.
All this data that's out there, I mean, one of the reasons they're hacking is we just have so much data out there, and there is so much available, and they're able to do a lot of nasty stuff with it.
Susan Tompor at the Detroit Free Press on ignoring hackers at your own risk. Well, in communities across the country, educators and leaders have embarked on an unprecedented quest to find missing students in hopes of re-engaging them in formal education before it's too late. For example, after more than a year and a half of at-home learning, Los Angeles children are back in school now, but nobody knows how many will actually show up. While some students logged in from home and tried their best with the pandemic's online schooling, thousands disappeared altogether. They rarely signed into online courses, never turned in an assignment, never appeared in Zoom videos. Their schools have no idea where they are, or even in some cases, whether they still live in the U.S. More from Erin Richards, education reporter at USA Today. Erin, what's up here?
Well, we know a lot of kids around the country took different schooling options last year, right? A lot of kids might have gone to homeschooling. They might have transferred. But in especially large districts, a lot of kids just have kind of fallen off the map. A bunch of kids didn't show up in any roster anywhere, in-person school or online school. And so as districts are starting to reopen fully, administrators are wondering who's going to come back. And of the thousands of kids that are missing, where did they go?
Yeah. The vast majority, you said, of the missing ones are low income also.
Yes. So what we know about the missing kids so far is that there's quite a few young kiddos in kindergarten that have just sort of disappeared. Now, some of those kids may show up in first grade this year, but we're not for sure. There's also quite a few older students who may be working now instead of going to school. And so that's often happening more in lower income communities for a couple of reasons. Clearly, older kids may be able to work right now and make money, and they've gotten into the habit of doing that. And so it may be less enticing to come back to school in person if you've already got a full-time job in the past year. Also, a lot of large districts that serve mostly low-income students in big cities didn't open for in-person instruction right away. Los Angeles was one of the last districts to reopen last year, and it was only for elementary kids. Kids in middle school and high school were out the entire year doing online learning. And so a lot of those kids have just kind of not been super engaged. And that's why this push to get kids back in buildings is going to be more successful in some of the suburban communities that may be open for in-person instruction sooner. They've already shown you could do this with masks on and keep everybody pretty safe. Whereas bigger districts that serve lower income kids, where families have been disproportionately impacted by the virus, may be more tempted to stay away because of, you know, it's hard to change habits, and they may still be fearful about the safety concerns around COVID.
We're speaking with Erin Richards, national education reporter at USA Today. Her story is called America is Heading Back to School. Teachers are looking for thousands of missing kids. How far behind are these kids, by the way?
We've got a number of different national reports that we've been looking at. One of the recent ones from a group called McKinsey & Company, a big global management consulting firm, estimates that kids are about 5 months behind in math and about 4 months behind in reading. But that's just the average. We know kids in low-income schools and kids of color have fallen much farther behind than their white counterparts, especially higher-income kids. That's in part because a lot of lower-income and minority kids were behind before the pandemic, and so a lot of online learning didn't help. And the reports that we're getting so far were mostly kids that could be tested last year, which means we're mostly looking at results of kids that might have been in person already. So we don't even have data, progress data, on the kids who were out of school the longest. Yeah. That won't really happen until they're back in buildings this fall and we can get some sense of where they're at.
Explain the efforts, Aaron, if you would, about trying to find some of these missing kids.
Right. So Los Angeles, second largest district in the country, behind New York City, and certainly New York City too. There have been a variety of efforts around the country, especially in larger districts, to find kids. They've ranged from principals making house visits, counselors and therapists making house visits, to homes where kids just didn't log in very much last year. In New York City, one of the national unions has offered money to teachers to go door to door in low-income neighborhoods and try to talk with parents about the importance of returning to school. Los Angeles, same thing. A lot of community groups have gotten some amount of money from, other philanthropists, maybe some support from the district to go out and do these kind of canvassing efforts that look very much like a door-to-door political campaign, only instead of getting out the vote, it's getting back to school. One problem with these is that canvassing is pretty inefficient. If you're using public voter registration data and you're trying to make, estimates on where the parents of school-age kids live, it's less accurate than districts, handing over information about kids who either haven't shown up or have been absent the entire last year. But of course, there's some privacy concerns around that, right? Districts may have to get better at assigning a district staff person to hook up with a community agency, and then they together can marshal their forces and go into the community and find folks who, are willing to talk about what's keeping their child out of school and what things we can do as community support groups and with all this extra federal relief money to entice kids to come back and to help them get back on track.
Thanks, Aaron. Aaron Richards, education reporter at USA Today. Coming up next, Kmart's abandoned buildings.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like you're going 100 miles an hour, barely keeping up. But to cruise through challenges, you need someone who's right there with you. That's what Dell Technologies advisors do. They have the tech advice you need to get past whatever's in front of you and get to where you want to go. Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and do more with modern devices and Windows 10 Pro.
Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. The businesses of the future are being built today, and Michigan is where they start. Learn more by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity. The two-decade slide by Kmart has transformed the commercial real estate market in unexpected ways, bringing churches, truck washes, and self-storage facilities to places that once sold Martha Stewart sheets and Joe Boxer pajamas. Kevin Williams, reporter for the New York Times, has a look at how some vacant Kmarts are being used. Kevin, what's out there?
What happened to Kmart is not what happened to Walmart. Walmart kind of grew and picked great locations and sort of predicted where the suburbs were going to move. Kmart, their locations, they never really caught on that their shoppers were moving to the suburbs. And they picked these locations that weren't terrible, but they weren't the prime real estate by the interstate. They were these marginal locations. And it ultimately did them in.
So now, how many Kmart stores are left at this point?
This is incredible. There are only, in the mainland United States, if we don't count the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico, there are 11 Kmarts.
Wow.
That's it.
All right. So that means, as you explained it in the story, across a series of years here, a lot of Kmart stores went vacant, leaving a lot of usable space for others. But what's that been like?
Yeah, and because they chose these marginal locations, there have been plenty of empty Kmarts that have been repurposed by other big box stores. But because of their marginal locations in their portfolio, it's been a great opportunity for places that wouldn't typically get that kind of commercial space to get it. We're talking, as the article says, flea markets. I found a truck driving school, which was in an old Kmart, a funeral home, swap meets. Churches seem to be really attracted to old Kmarts. Plenty of parking.
Yeah. How come then, say, the locations didn't work out for Kmart at the time? for certain consumers, but they seem to be okay now for a bowling alley, as you said, or a truck driving school or a church.
Well, because they picked marginal locations, the rent isn't going to be as high there as, you know, the prime tract of land by the interstate. And that makes it a little bit more appealing and affordable to, say, a church or a truck driving school, places that might not have as deep of pockets as, a big box store. So it's really presented an opportunity for, players who might not typically get that kind of space to get that kind of space.
Yeah. We're speaking with Kevin Williams, reporter for the New York Times. His piece is called "When Kmart Moved Out, Churches and Flea Markets Moved In." You referenced in your story, too, which I thought was interesting. Some of these places obviously are huge. But what about the depth? I mean, how do you use that depth?
It's not easy. If you think of bowling alley, there have been, bowling alley's perfect. You've got the aisles pretty much marking the lanes. A church, that makes sense. It's a very cavernous building.
Yeah.
It's hard. I mean, you can't really repurpose it into offices or apartments very easily. It's expensive. So, you're looking for a reuse that can use that big space, like a flea market or a church or, because it's really expensive to repurpose it into something it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah. Do the new occupants of these former Kmart stores have staying power? Does it seem like they want to be there and are thriving, at least?
One of the companies that I interviewed for the article was a pharmaceutical company in California, and they were thrilled for the space. They've invested $30 million into it. They joke that there are no blue light specials on their medicines that they're making there. I think most places that snag that space are hoping to be there for the long haul.
Yeah. That's good stuff. How big are, like, some of the biggest ones when you're trying to fill space?
The average Kmart was about 80,000 square feet, but they attempted an experiment with super Kmarts back in the 1990s, which was a belated attempt to compete with Walmart and their groceries. Super Ks were close to 200,000 square feet, and those are really difficult to repurpose because they're so big.
Thanks, Kevin. Kevin Williams, reporter for the New York Times. Coming up next, when did white paint become so complicated? Apply for a loan with a bank and you might get free coffee. But Marcus by Goldman Sachs offers personal loans with no fees, ever. So consolidate debt with a no-fee personal loan from Marcus by Goldman Sachs or get free coffee. Go to marcus.com. to learn more about our no-fee personal loans and other products today. Lending and deposits provided by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, member FDIC. Choosing a shade of white paint from more than 1,000 nearly identical hues has long been confusing. As homeowners flocked to hardware stores for renovation projects during the pandemic, sales of paint spiked along with stress levels. The process is only getting harder as companies roll out new variations. Among those feeling the stress, Wall Street Journal reporter Melissa Korn. Melissa, what's this about?
Yes, people have some colorful reactions. Sorry, I'll keep my puns to a minimum. There are so many shades of white out there that people can choose from when they're painting their homes that it really does quickly become overwhelming and seems to take on this importance and stress that other parts of home decoration don't necessarily quite reach. So yes, people care about their tiles and their countertops, but there's something about paint that people just go crazy about and fixate on and stew over for weeks or months. And jeez. I spoke to some people who got into really big fights about it with their partners, and it's tensions run high when it comes to white paint.
Holy cow. I from at least a couple anecdotes in your story, I felt like it was, what's the phrase, paralysis by analysis.
Yes, completely. People are just so overwhelmed by the choices that they can't make a decision. And there was one couple in the piece who, it's been 4 months since they moved in. They have paint samples on the wall. And when I spoke to the wife after the story published, and she said, I think we might just sit and wait a little while longer. We still can't decide.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, in my mind, it's just paint, right? If you don't like it, do it again.
It is just paint, but people want to convey something with that paint, right? They want it to be a warm, homey feel. They want it to brighten up a room. They have been told that different window exposures affect the hues, and you got to be careful with that, and quite a bit of import and meaning goes into these whites now. And yeah. I think if there were just three or four choices, people wouldn't make such a big deal out of it.
Right. So based on that, then what happened to, say, just white versus off-white? What have the paint manufacturers done?
There are all different shades of white and off-white. There are whites with blue undertones and pink or red undertones and yellow undertones that can make a room feel warmer or cooler. There is this whole category of color called grayish, which is a mix of gray and beige. Jeez. That's a word I learned in reporting this story. And, you know, there's funny names and cute and clever, but not really all that insightful descriptions, like, you know, as crisp as the first winter snowfall and things like that. And it's just information overload.
Yeah. Was it somebody in your story who said that that's like wine tasting notes, poetic, but not helpful?
Exactly. It's really nice to read, but no idea, you know, what that's going to look like on my wall. I don't know what the three different versions of snow are going to look like on the wall.
Right. That's funny. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Melissa Korn. Her story is called Simply White, Snowfall White, Schoolhouse White. Proliferation of white paint shades stupefies renovators. Have paint makers said, okay, yeah, maybe it's a little too much? Are they dialing it back, or is that not a thing?
They're not really dialing it back. If anything, they continue to roll out more. There's often kind of special lines tied to interior designers and celebrities, and there doesn't seem to be any end in sight to the white and just general color options. There are a few paint companies that limit their palettes. You know, they'll only produce a certain number at any given time, but those are more of the exception than the rule.
All right, so let's say I know a particular journalist who has encountered this. how do we play it as consumers at this point? Is there any guidance for us?
You know, when I went into reporting this article, I think I was hoping to get some guidance myself. The story came about after I walked into a paint store and was so overwhelmed by Benjamin Moore's curated collection of 152 whites and off-whites that I walked back out of the store and tweeted about it. So I was hoping to get some guidance. And the problem is everyone really feels very strongly about their white. And you spoke to interior designers and, you know, some are live and die by Chantilly lace. Others, it's White Dove and Dimity and whatever it may be. And I ended up with just a bunch of squares of different colored white paint on my wall right now. So wow. I'm no better off than any of the people on the story.
Thanks, Melissa. Melissa Korn, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. This is pretty sobering. Every 10 seconds, someone becomes a victim of fraud or ID theft. And even worse, 23% never recover their money. If you think it can happen to you, that's what they're counting on. But now, there's Aura. Aura is all-in-one protection from identity theft, financial fraud, malware, scam sites, and more. And Aura alerts you to fraud and threats fast, like if your online accounts or passwords were leaked or if someone tries to open a bank account in your name. It's a new type of security service that protects all of your online information with one simple subscription. Aura is easy to set up, and all plans come with $1 million in identity theft insurance to help recover your stolen funds and experienced U.S.-based customer support that's got your back. Right now, Aura is offering our listeners early access and 3 free months when you visit aura.com/Gordon. Go to aura.com/Gordon to get access before anyone else and 3 months for free. That's aura.com/Gordon. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka coming up this half hour. Ignoring data breaches at your own peril. Also, the toy of the pandemic and how a weekend trip to Tonga turned into 18 months. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. So, following more than a year of widespread closures and work-from-home office policies, traffic is finally beginning to approach pre-pandemic levels on many roads in the Boston area,
and other major metro regions. John Hancock, reporter at the Boston Globe, has crunched some new traffic data. John, give us findings.
There's been a couple of takeaways. One is that traffic is getting close to being back to 2019 levels. It's not fully back yet, but it's getting close. And a couple of things that we're seeing as traffic is coming back is that it's evolving a little bit. The weekend traffic has come back faster than the weekday traffic. And then the rush hours changed on the weekday. One of the things that is a little different is prior to the pandemic, you would have these peaks of traffic volume in the early morning and then kind of in the earlier mid-afternoon as people are coming and going home from work. And now, while you still have this morning peak, it's not as pronounced as it was before. And the afternoon peak is spread out more across the afternoon, where it starts kind of building right after lunch, and it kind of stays even through like 1 p.m. to 6 p.m. throughout the afternoon, whereas before you had a defined peak somewhere between like 3 and 5 p.m., depending on what road you were on.
Does that speak to more people allowed to work from home?
That's the general thought based on the people that I talk to, is that a lot of that is people are working from home, so you have traffic that's depressed a little bit depending on kind of the portion of the city that you're at. But then the reason that traffic is being spread out more in the afternoon is that the traffic isn't just people coming home from work, but it's people that have been working from home that may be going out for lunch to get something for lunch or running an errand or something like that. And it's all kind of just evening out through the afternoon because it's not just people coming home from work after work. It's people running errands and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I was thinking, too, about kind of the work from home angle is kind of multi-pronged, right? So even if you're supposed to be at the office, maybe you're a 9-to-5-er, but maybe you do your 9:30 meeting by Zoom from home and then go to the office at, say, 10:30. I guess that's part of this evolving rush hour.
I think so. And that's, you know, it's hard to kind of put a pin on it because it differs from person to person and from company to company, depending on what their work from home policy is. You know, one of the other things that's kind of contributing to the spread out traffic throughout the day is that as more people are working from home, more people are getting deliveries at home, whether it be lunch or food deliveries or office supplies or stuff like that. So you have more of those kind of Amazon, UPS, FedEx trucks out on the road as well.
Mm. We're speaking with John Hancock, reporter at the Boston Globe. His piece is called How Traffic Has Changed During the Pandemic. So it's not just where you are in Boston, right? This is in a good chunk of the big metro areas.
Yeah, so one of the studies that we looked at, one of the companies that we use to get the data is called Streetlight, and they did a study of 7 metro areas around the nation. They found that in 5 of these, this kind of what they call peak spreading in the afternoon was prevalent, not just in multiple cities. And then we also took a look at the 2021 Urban Mobility Report that Texas A&M does. And they look at over 100 urban areas, and they found kind of the same pattern in that the morning rush hour is still kind of there, but not as pronounced. And then the afternoon rush hour is kind of flattened out a little bit.
I guess the big question right now is what's ahead, right? Things look like they're constantly changing ahead of Labor Day when kids are supposed to go back to school. But, I mean, how do you predict what happens then?
Yeah, so the city of Boston did a survey last year that roughly 38% of commuters said that they plan to drive alone to work post-pandemic. And that was up from 23% before the pandemic. And a lot of that is people kind of being a little worried about cramming into, you know, a train or a bus or with a bunch of people as the pandemic's going on. So the city predicted that could add an additional 60,000 cars to greater Boston's roads each morning during the peak travel hour.
Thanks, John. John Hancock, reporter at the Boston Globe. Coming up next, why not to ignore data breaches. It's true. Half of our faces have been hidden for a while. And now that we can really be outside again, it's time to pay attention to that lower half again, the part that Harry's specializes in. Get your smooth, clean-shaven look back again with Harry's. Redeem a Harry's trial set when you visit harrys.com/deal. I'm constantly amazed at how close my shave is every day. With the ergonomic handle, Harry's blades glide and leave my skin incredibly smooth. All for as low as $2 a blade. Still,
even now that they're sharper and last longer than ever. Harry's is giving their best offer to our listeners. New Harry's customers can redeem a starter set for just $3 at harrys.com/deal. You get a 5-blade razor, a weighted handle, foaming shave gel with aloe, and a travel cover to protect your blades when you're on the go. That's a $13 value for just $3. There's truly never been a better time to try Harry's. Go to harrys.com/deal to try Harry's today. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Given all the stressors of late, job insecurity, right? The ongoing pandemic, fears that the Delta variant will cause more havoc ahead. Many people probably aren't worrying a lot about data breaches and ID theft, but the crooks certainly aren't giving up. Here's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
With so many things to worry about these days, you might be tempted to push aside worries about data breaches. But Susan Tompor of the Detroit Free Press says you ignore hackers at your own peril. Susan, I heard something recently that half of us know we've been hacked and the other half have been hacked. Is that about right these days?
Well, it certainly is. You know, a lot of this stuff is already out there, and I think people realize that, and that's maybe why they don't get too excited when they hear, you know, some news like the news out of T-Mobile this week. But this is it's getting more and more sophisticated. T-Mobile's, you know, called this a highly sophisticated cyber attack. They're only saying that most of the data that was exposed at this point, they're saying, is names, date of birth, social security, and driver's license. No phone numbers or passwords or account numbers. But some are disputing that. Some are questioning it because they're saying it's indicating that possibly phone numbers were compromised because screenshots shared by the hackers suggest otherwise. You know, they're out there trying to sell this stuff on the web, and that's how the dark web, and that's how we typically find out about some of this.
All right. Now, what are some steps you can take to protect your information?
Well, the number one step, I'm surprised that more than a third, or roughly a third, according to one survey, of people have not checked their credit report. I can't even imagine that ever. You know, we probably should check them every year. I don't think I've done that every year, but I think many of us should. You know, that's certainly, I know I've checked it in the past, and that's certainly the important thing to do right from the start, no matter what. And the free reports are at annualcreditreport.com. That's where you want to start out. Because you want to see if there's anybody opening an account in your name. If you are hacked and you're in this T-Mobile situation, they're going to offer you 2 free years of identity protection services through McAfee. Sign up for this. Take advantage. You know, you should be doing that. You want those kind of services. And then another thing that experts are recommending is you may actually want to freeze your credit file. Now, this is something I have done, but the thing is, you're going to need to unfreeze it if you're trying to open a new credit card or get a car loan or something of that sort. So you have to remember, if you froze it and you're tempted to open another credit card, you're going to have to unfreeze it in time to do that. But the freeze is a free service, and it's not going to hurt your credit score, and it can help prevent scammers from using your information. Now, again, you're still able to access your credit or your lines of credit, so criminals can still try to tap into your accounts, so you have to watch your statements, and you really should change your passwords regularly.
We're speaking with Susan Tompor of the Detroit Free Press. Susan, you mentioned it earlier that the hackers are selling this information on the dark web. Are people actually getting money from us?
You mean getting money from us? How, you know, paying for this data?
Yes, paying.
Oh, yes, I think they do. You know, the criminals want this data. I can't tell you how much they're selling it for. I don't know the pricing per se, but they are trying to sell this stuff to different rings, crime rings, different groups that they would use this. One of the experts mentioned to me, of course, that, you know, some governments do back some of this hacking, you know, so that is why it can be sophisticated, because you've got some foreign governments out there that are actually backing some of this. You know, it's serious business. You used to think of it as being a guy in the basement or somebody out there, but it's really not that. It's much more sophisticated. It's not much you can do on your own, but some of this is low-tech, you know, as I mentioned, with the annual credit report and all that. Some of that is, and, you know, you do have to take it seriously.
That's this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka with personal finance reporter Susan Tompor at the Detroit Free Press. Coming up next, the toy of the pandemic.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. If you're the parent of a teen or tween, you're probably well aware of the craze around the toy called Pop-Its. They've exploded in popularity over the past year, driven by a combination of pandemic stress and viral TikTok videos. Clips of Pop-Its are proliferating across the platform, with hashtag fidget toys driving 12.5 billion views as of the middle of August. More from Haley Velasco, social media editor at The Wall Street Journal. Haley, what are Pop-Its?
Pop-Its are these toys that basically mimic bubble wrap. So they're silicone in all different shapes and colors, basically hand size, and you pop it back and forth either by yourself or with friends, and you play a game.
How popular have these things gotten?
These things are crazy. I mean, you know, in the last year over the pandemic, we're now seeing millions and millions of these being sold. The interesting thing about them too is that their price point is pretty affordable for most, 99 cents to up to 30 bucks. You know, kids are just loving them.
These came about originally as kind of therapy items, correct?
Yes. Therapists have been using these in their therapy for, oh gosh, decades. They to use eye hand to work with kids mostly, but adults too, all in a myriad of different things, stress, anxiety, mental health, really just to focus and isolate certain, you know, fingers or fine motor movements.
I was just going to say, what actually is therapeutic about it for those who it works for? It's a sensory thing. Is it the sound of it? Is it the sight? Is it being able to do it over and over again?
So the therapist that I talked to, it's kind of two things. The first is focusing on a continuous movement that's the same. So that's the stress and anxiety piece of it. So, you know, you take it out of your pocket or your bag, your backpack, and you're focused on doing the same continuous movement over and over again. So there's a calming effect to that. But on the building side of things, they also use it if you're building, you're working with your hands, your fine motor skills to really develop that as well. So it seems to be used in two different ways.
Oh, wow. We're speaking with Haley Velasco, social media editor at The Wall Street Journal. Her story is called How Pop-Its, the TikTok sensation, became the toy of the pandemic. And this has turned into almost a side story here with people who hunt for these types of things.
Right. Definitely. They're out there at toy stores. You know, I reported this story from my local toy store. I was there buying gifts, looking around, and all of a sudden they were like, you guys need to know about this trend. And when I tell you there were kids running displays, it was crazy. Parents driving from all over. Just everybody wants Pop-Its.
And somebody said your story, like, this is an interesting one because it's been lasting, right? It's got some staying power.
It definitely has. And I think what's really interesting to me, you know, toy experts are so smart in this space. And I said to them, you know, will this trend fizzle out? Are we going to see it in the holidays? Are we going to see it in the spring? And they said, we've never seen something with such staying power as these Pop-Its because of the variety in the industry, but also because you can have so many and kids want more and more. So they say holidays, you're going to see them. And then they say the spring too. They're going to be different versions everybody's going to still be wanting them.
Thanks, Haley. Haley Velasco, social media editor at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, what a long, strange trip it's been.
This is a metaphor for your business's journey. Sometimes it feels like the course keeps changing right before your eyes. Whoa! And in order to maneuver it, you need an expert by your side. That's what Dell Technologies Advisors do. They have the tech solutions you need to help you get out in front and stay ahead of the game. Woo! Call an advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL and do more with modern devices in Windows 10 Pro.
We'll finish with this. When British traveler Zoe Stevens flew into the South Pacific island nation of Tonga last month, she was only planning to stay for the weekend. The 27-year-old had been living in China for 2.5 years before taking some time out to travel. Keen to escape talk of the virus, CNN says she booked a flight to Tonga. However, nearly 18 months later, she's still stuck on the tiny archipelago, which is shut to foreign nationals because of COVID. She has tried and failed to return to China for months and months. During her time in Tonga, which has a population of just over 100,000, she's begun a master's degree in international communications online and is currently living in a beach home while house-sitting for a family who cannot return to the island due to travel restrictions. She spends some of her free time paddleboarding and snorkeling, as well as posting about her experiences on her Instagram and YouTube accounts, and has been able to pick up some remote work here and there. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.